Estamos con la profesora Amelia Hatfield, jefa del Departamento de Política de la Universidad de Surrey y directora del Centro de Estudios Británicos y Europeos. Profesora Hatfield, gracias por contestar la llamada de Radio Universidad de Chile. Profesora, el fallo del Tribunal Supremo dado a conocer el lunes fue apabullante contra Boris Johnson y sus pretensiones de salir de la Unión Europea a como de lugar. ¿Qué puede hacer ahora el primer ministro?
This is very interesting in a sense. He is going to be compelled to return to Parliament. Parliament will now resume. The justices made very clear today that prorogation was unlawful, and therefore it has been quashed. It is as if it never took place. So therefore, Parliament has to come back as quickly as possible. For Johnson, this basically means a speeding up of the calendar. He had hoped to use this additional five-week period, I think, to try to arrange a number of things in terms of Brexit, either to try to put a package together without the input of Parliament, or possibly to arrange another bill through the House entirely. So that cannot happen now. In fact, what's likely is that with Parliament resuming tomorrow, all manner of different types of bills, emergency procedures and emergency bills may be put to the House. We saw a couple of weeks ago in the dying hours of Parliament before it was prorogued, or actually paused, I suppose we should say now, how quickly the Houses can move when they want to. The Benn Bill managed to get through the House and the Lords and back to the House again in under 3 days, which really is a record. So Johnson is now faced with the prospect of an equally exercised House, a House that's really motivated to get things through. Obviously, they may feel that the bill moved by Hillary Benn does one thing. It obviously tries to make illegal crashing out of the European Union without a deal at the end of October. But some members of Parliament may feel that doesn't go far enough. So I wouldn't be surprised to see additional motions or humble addresses being put to the House to make absolutely sure that that doesn't happen. I think we've also seen Labour really emboldened in terms of sticking to their guns, determined not to have to allow the Prime Minister to have his way, determined to see this bill to prevent the crashing out of the European of the UK on the 31st of October, determined to see that through first. So they're really going to hold the line. So you're not going to see any sort of flirting, I think, by the Labour Party with anything to do with the general election, however hard Boris Johnson might try. So he remains as penned in as ever at this point.
Con el fallo del Tribunal Supremo, ¿qué pasa entonces con el discurso de la Reina?
It's quite natural, to try to bring one session of Parliament to an end and to literally prorogue it for all the right reasons in a short period of time, 4 to 6 days, which gives you a little bit of breathing space, and then you commence a new session. And what comes in between those two sessions is the Queen's speech, that at that point when the sovereign lays out the policy of her government, obviously a speech written by ministers, and that speech itself can contain, more attempts by the government to put down both domestic policy and more ideas on Brexit. For example, clarifying how to respond to a no deal. So all of the Operation Yellowhammer reports that came out. So I wouldn't be surprised, I think, if Boris Johnson felt that he would try to quite literally and in the kind of constitutionally correct sense of the word to prorogue Parliament. And provided he did it for the right reasons, for the right amount of time,
well,
with the object of having a Queen's speech at the end and then switching into this new session, the second session, that could still happen. So it might be difficult, I think, for your readers and listeners to try to get their head around this. It's really hard for the Brits as well. But just because the justices have ruled today that prorogation didn't take place now doesn't necessarily mean that the correct use of prorogation won't actually happen.
Eso fue lo que Boris Johnson señaló en Nueva York el lunes. No está de acuerdo con el fallo, pero podría intentar, de igual forma, una nueva suspensión.
I think that's probably what he's trying to get at. I mean, he's obviously incredibly angry that he's been thwarted yet again. He's lost countless votes in the House. He lost the ruling in Scotland 2 weeks ago, and now he's lost the ruling in the high in the Supreme Court now. And he's been torn between saying, I will obey the rule of law, I disagree with, but I will uphold this ruling. But also saying that, you know, he was going to find a ways around the Bend bill that went through a couple of weeks ago. So he's kind of torn in two different directions. So he now has to oblige the Supreme Court. Parliament is going to come back tomorrow while he's in New York. So he's literally out of the country in every sense. But he will probably try to once again use the tool of proroguing Parliament, of pausing Parliament, of suspending it, in order to bring it to an end. But he's going to have to be incredibly careful. I mean, all eyes are upon him now. He will have to be absolutely transparent in why he's doing this. He'll have to very clearly say, I'm doing it in order to shut one session down and open another. He won't be able to do it for very long at all. I think if it's even a fraction beyond 4 or 5 days, there will be an absolute outcry that once again he's trying to do it for an unnaturally long period in a way that benefits, you know, his ability to prevent discussion and debate. I think it was very interesting that Lady Hale today, in her full text, made it very, very clear that not only is prorogation itself a matter for the courts, it's justiciable, but that effectively the shutting of Parliament had the effect, and these are really strong words for the justice, it had the effect of frustrating or preventing the ability of Parliament to carry out its role, to carry out its core duties, its constitutional functions, without reasonable justification. Those two last words, reasonable justification, is what Johnson will now need to be absolutely explicit on in order, if he wants to try, for a genuine prorogation this time around. So the eyes of the nation will be upon him for sure.
Al intentar una nueva suspensión del Parlamento, Boris Johnson debe recurrir nuevamente a la reina, siendo el primer ministro su consejero. ¿Cómo puede ella negarse a esta nueva suspensión?
Without the authority of the Queen is advised by her ministers, but it cannot happen without her. She's in a very difficult position here, and that's not something that the Queen enjoys, is kind of being between the law and between politics, you know, between the Constitution and between Parliament as well. The Queen is, as the constitutional monarch, bound to be guided by her ministers. In this particular area, she doesn't have any power. She has no prerogative beyond being basically following the guidance given to her. It now transpires that guidance was unlawful. So I don't think there's any sense, you know, or blame being attributed to the Queen. It's very clear that the rationale itself, the reasons that Johnson gave, were clearly to do with the direct shutting down of Parliament in order to frustrate and diminish its ability to discuss it. So the Queen, I think, will be justifiably angry, if I may judge, to have been led unlawfully into a position where she enabled an outcome that has been demonstrably proven to be unlawful. She's not going to be pleased about that again. But this doesn't get her off the hook. She still cannot say no to a second request. I suppose unless she feels that the second request itself is unlawful, and this is absolutely the most uncharted waters ever, Claudia, so I'm absolutely sort of hypothesizing because it never in history has this ever happened. But I suppose my sense is if the Queen is uncertain a second time because the first time has been proved to be unlawful, she may at least ask for additional advice. She may stall for time. Okay. She may feel she wants advice either from her own legal counsel. She may ask for advice from the Privy Council. She may even ask for advice from the law lords in the House of Lords. She may also ask for advice from the Lord Chancellor, or I suppose at a stretch, she could even ask for advice from the UK Supreme Court to make absolutely sure that she hasn't been complicit in enabling a second unlawful outcome, one that ultimately frustrates Parliament, because, of course, she in many ways is supposed to be the defender of the Parliament. She upholds the rule of law. All of that is, you know, really embodied in the monarchy as well. That's quite a step to sort of suggest that, you know, the monarch is unhappy with the request of the ministers. And it does suggest a slight shift in power, that she would effectively outflank the prime minister at this point. The Queen has only she can dissolve Parliament, which is interesting. I mean, what she might do is refuse a prorogation and just dissolve Parliament. But those are the most, those are waters that have never been charted before. I think every lawyer in the land is sort of scratching their heads and wondering. I think it's probably best if Johnson, if he feels he needs a Queen's speech, and I'm sure he's going to probably try this, is absolutely careful, rock solid, that it's a very short prorogation, that the content of the Queen's speech is very clear, that it contains a lot of domestic legislation, which we've heard all before, and that anything to do with Brexit is clearly laid out in terms of either no deal preparations or managing an orderly departure on the basis of a deal. So either deal or no deal, whatever legislation needs to be put in place to accommodate either of those positions. If the Queen sees that and thinks, okay, you know, that's decent content, that's a reasonable-looking Queen's speech, we're going to prorogue Parliament for 4 to 5 days, that's normal, you know, it's clear we're going to come back and move into the second session, I'm content with that, then I think she will authorize it and she will go ahead. And then we will move into the position that we would have on the 14th of October next month. Effectively, this is what's going to, if that happens, it'll just happen more quickly. or actually, sorry, and this is another option, it could happen on that date anyway. There's every sense that Parliament will just, you know, chunter on, it'll just roll on between now and the 14th. You know, Johnson gets the prorogation, the legal one he wants. It's a short one. It's authorized by the Queen. It goes through, you know, and then then you have a couple of days before this incredibly important summit in Brussels on the 17th and 18th. So you can see what a delicate timetable it all is, which is so very interesting, I think.
Mirado desde la perspectiva constitucional, los frenos y los contrapesos funcionaron perfectamente en el Estado de Derecho imperante en el Reino Unido, lo que realmente es muy interesante.
I think it is, and I don't think it's just a sort of an existential question or even a wholly sort of an intellectual question, although it's certainly going to make a huge impression on people who study it from a scholarly perspective. I think you are looking at probably a reassertion, if I'm not mistaken, of the checks and balances. I think it's very, very clear from Lady Hale's statement that the clear separation of powers lies at the heart of her judgment today. It's the exercise of power and the limitations of the exercise of power, I think, that come most clearly into view with this judgment. I mean, there are two components to it, and you're quite right to flag this up. Just in terms of the separation of powers is, you know, who has the authority to rule on something like this. Now, originally, I mean, the English High Court felt that trying to rule on, you know, something like prorogation, effectively, you know, the business of Parliament, goes well beyond the judiciary. That the Parliament, you know, it orders itself. And if the executive deems the Parliament to go in one way, you know, that's for Parliament to decide. That's absolutely not to do with the courts. But the Scottish Court of Sessions overruled that, a Court of Appeal overruled that, and the Supreme Court has done that again today. So just in terms of the sort of justiciable nature of where justice lies in terms of providing a ruling across the separation of powers, I was very interested that in Justice Hale's pronouncement. And I'll just read this two lines which really stood out for me. She says, the courts have exercised a supervisory jurisdiction. So a sort of over and above, a sort of watchdog authority, if you like, over the lawfulness of acts of the government for centuries. And she quotes an incredibly important ruling. In 1611, the court held that the king, who was then the government, has no prerogative, no power but that which the law of the land allows him. So I think in this first instance, Justice Hale and all the other, all the 11 judges, were absolutely clear that, you know, the government has to be kept to heel. And if it is, if it comes down to it, the courts will intervene in this. In terms of considering how those powers are subsequently used in Parliament and the extent to which, you know, and the limits to which, I think we've seen very, very clearly some powers, you know, can be justiciable and some not. I'm not saying that the ruling today makes all parliamentary business, you know, the purview of the court. I think that's too far. She didn't say that either. But what she did say is there is no doubt, and I'm quoting here again, that the courts have jurisdiction to decide upon the existence and limits of a prerogative power, whether that power lies in Parliament or her ministers or even the monarch herself. All the parties to this case accept this. So I think this is a health check, if you like, on the separation of powers and a clarification that if need be, the courts will step in this supervisory capacity. It's astonishing, I think, in a country that has no real written constitution. Yeah. It's got very various acts and a whole lot of procedure and much tradition and custom, that it's taken to this point, you know, on an issue this big, for a court this important, to rule on something so crucial.
It is. Anyway, it is very interesting, indeed. Boris Johnson señaló que cuando fue a pedir a la reina la suspensión del Parlamento, que el país necesitaba avanzar, enfocarse en la política interna y en las necesidades del país. También, una importante parte de la sociedad británica parece estar cansada de que todo en el Reino Unido gira en torno al Brexit. ¿Cómo cree usted que la ciudadanía toma ahora el fallo del Tribunal Supremo?
Well, you're absolutely right. I think it's a very valid observation. I think there's enormous frustration in the country, whether or not people continue to stick by their views, Remainers continuing to be Remain and Leavers continuing to be Leave. I think there's enough evidence to suggest that these are now very, very entrenched. At the same time, I've seen evidence as an academic and certainly as somebody who does a lot of public speaking, to see quite a bit of floating going on back and forth, usually from Leave to Remain camps for the most part. Both camps have in common, however, utter frustration and genuine fatigue at the sheer length of time and the twists and turns that it has taken to try to get the country into a position to even start considering what leaving Europe looks like. I think Parliament has done a poor job, and the executive an even more poor job, in clarifying what that means. And I think in years to come, we're going to look back and actually see that the majority of real work, for better or for worse, was probably the May deal. That's a 528-page, neatly organized treaty that provides for an ordered departure. And had it passed in the House, much of the consequential upset, I think, would have been avoided. I think at that point, the reason it wasn't is because people were playing for party politics and for national politics and also for, you know, personal interest, rather than really looking at the prospect of the deal as a genuine solution. And my sense is, again, in years to come, there may be real feelings that that was a missed opportunity, because what comes now could be so very much worse. Unless there is an ordered deal in the incredibly short amount of time left between now and this summit in Brussels, and even more crucially, between the end of the summit in Brussels and the 31st of October. Now, even if the Benn bill goes through, I still don't put it past that this prime minister and his various executive cadre to try yet something else. So again, even though the Benn bill has ruled out and made illegal crashing out without a deal, I'm concerned that loopholes will be found to bring that bill down, that Johnson will simply not oblige it and actually refuse to send the various letters to Brussels, or worse still, the European Union itself, you know, quite legitimately runs out of patients and doesn't grant an extension,
yeah.
All of which effectively have the same output, have the same effect, and that's a massively disordered exit, a no-deal Brexit from Europe in a way that very much harms Northern Ireland and Scotland in constitutional and devolutionary terms, and England as a whole, in terms of its, you know, its inevitable rupture with the European Union. So people are fed up and they just want out. But I think I would beg them to think in terms of the sheer importance of why we must get this right. And if it's a difference between, you know, just a few more months of patience, either to look again at the deal or to try to come up with a new one, I think the future of the country is worth that patience.
Profesora Hatfield, muchas gracias por su tiempo. Que tenga buenos días.
I will. Thank you, Gloria.
Bye-bye.
All the best. Cheers. Bye-bye.